It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfhorn. A lot of people assume that when you have kids, your outdoor adventures have to end. That's not true. But most parents do make a lot of adjustments to include the whole family in their backcountry activities, or just tone it down to the kid level. Not everyone, however. On today's show, we're going to hear from a family that oriented their family to the outdoors instead of the other way around. Their son has had an unusual upbringing, but he's also become an incredible kayaker and skier. We'll talk about making those decisions for families, matching your outdoor values to your family activities, and how that could affect the upbringing you give to your children. My first guests are Bill and Louise Overington, and they have a really interesting lifestyle. They run a rafting and outdoor business in Healy, and the rest of the year they are somewhere else in the world, and they have a kid, Louis, who I don't say is part of this whole unit, and they've essentially built their life around their outdoor interests and their business, and it's seeking the climate they're interested in at different times of year. And I want to welcome you, Bill and Louise, to the show.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
So Denali Outdoor Center is a pretty big business where you've got rafting in the Nanana Canyon and kayaking, mountain biking, and cabin rentals, and it's something you've built up over a number of years. And so this is sort of your lifestyle you've got is something that evolved a little bit, I get the impression.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, this is actually our 20th anniversary.
Wow.
So we started the business in 1995. And we were guiding on the river here and decided that we wanted to do it a little differently and had some ideas on adding different activities. We were just raft guiding, and the company that we were working for at the time were really only interested in rafting. So we saw an opportunity to just, I guess, make other activities available in this area. The Nanana River is just an amazing resource right here at the entrance to Denali National Park. And for kayaking, there's a long tradition of kayaking here on the Nanana River. There's been a festival here. It's coming up on Chris Capps. Don't know if you know who she is.
She's a local
organizer, kayaker, community activist type person. And she actually has been the main coordinator of the Nanana River Festival, but it's almost, I want to say this year will be 39, next year will be 40 years.
Yeah. No, it's an amazing piece of water, and it also has the advantage that there's a lot of people there, so you can run a business in most of Alaska where we have wild water, there's nobody around, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And access is always a huge issue. And
right.
That's just the beauty of the Nanana River is it has many, many miles of accessible, fun, recreational river. And it runs right through this community, and it's the boundary of the national park, and there are thousands of visitors here, obviously. So it's a great opportunity. And I guess the point I was making about kayaking is the beauty of the Nanana is starts off with many miles of flat water moving current and just gradually progresses from class one, easy class two, into easy class three, all the way into the Nanana River Gorge that, you know, presents itself as class four at times. So, for instructional purposes and, progressing from a beginner kayaker and moving all the way into class four whitewater, it's a great stretch of river.
Mm-hmm.
And we added the component of our headquarters in Healy at Otto Lake, and so now we have the lake as well, and we do boat rentals here and kayak construction and all of that. So
yeah, you kind of got it covered now, but you're not there the rest of the year. When did you get to Alaska this season, and where were you coming from?
Well, we came from Colorado, and we came up here in 89. Bill was guiding up here on the river, and we were both in Durango. And then he came up in 89, and then I came up shortly later in 89 because he thought it was a great situation, and then he called me up.
Uh-huh.
And we've been seasonally coming up here since 89.
So now you sort of commute back and forth between Colorado and Alaska.
No, then we moved to Utah, and then we've been going to Utah since 96 because of the skiing. But I'm originally from New Zealand, and I want to get that in the equation, so now we're trying to get three places in the equation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and New Zealand competes with Alaska as an amazing outdoor place with extraordinary stuff going on in the reverse season. So it seems like that's a pretty good place to pair with Alaska. On the other hand, it's a really long way away.
Yes, it is.
Make our commute even longer.
Yeah. So how do you... go ahead.
It's like 6,600 miles from L.A. as opposed to 3,300 miles from Salt Lake to Alaska.
Yeah. So are there a lot of people in your industry who are doing this? I know a few people who own wilderness lodges in Alaska who might be down in Utah or Colorado. It seems like it's kind of a way to do it that makes some sense, and that you're not the only ones doing this.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think practically speaking, for us anyway, it had to do at least partially anyway with the availability of work. We could choose to just live year round in Healy, or in this local area, and we would have to sort of alter our specific interest, which is downhill skiing primarily in the winter, and so it just sort of presented itself in Utah that it had the downhill skiing and the availability of seasonal work for both of us. And so we sort of tried it, and it worked, and it turned into a lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, it seems like something would be a lot easier to do is when you were single or didn't have kids, and then when a kid comes along, people have to make adjustments. So tell me about when Louis showed up, how you sort of made the decision that, in fact, you weren't going to settle down in one place, you were going to keep doing this.
Well, it was because we've been doing it for so long. That was our life right then. We had this business, and so we couldn't really shut down the business and start, go to one place. I've always entertained the idea of doing that because sometimes I'm like, it's a little bit too much work going back and forth. But, the business is doing really well now, and, I feel like we're in it for the long haul. And Louis seems to be doing really well with it, it was easy when he was a baby and, a toddler. He just can go anywhere. It got a little bit more challenging when he was at school, but even that has evolved, and it's not as bad.
Well, it sounds like
both of the school systems have accepted the concept. They've embraced it, and they realize that that's his lifestyle, and they anticipate him coming back, and they know he's only going to be there for part of the year, and that seems to work for them.
So when does that switch take place in terms of how much school he does in each place?
Well, he starts off here in Healy in the fall, and he goes through till end of September, end of October, depending when we leave, and then we would go down to Utah, and then we would in the spring head back up, and he would finish up here for a month. But last year was unique because we didn't go back to Utah; we were homeschooling, and we went to New Zealand for 3 months.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so, we homeschooled him.
So how does that work with the two schools being in sync? Because it seems like different schools may present material at different levels, or it might be academically hard for him to make that adjustment. Has that been an issue you had to deal with?
He does have to adjust.
Yeah.
He has to settle into Utah when he leaves here. And the Tri-Valley School here in Healy, I think, is actually a very good school. And if anything, he's on a par with the kids that he goes to school with in Utah. If anything, he's at times maybe a little ahead of them down there, depending. But yeah, he just has to take a week or so and figure out where the kids are and where the class is in Utah and get on that page and and move forward. But he's so used to it, and it's been the way it's been forever, that he seems to adjust just fine.
And he's how old now?
13. He just turned 13.
Okay. So what about the... Go ahead. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say life of a 13-year-old is a pretty big deal, and I know my kids are... what their friends are doing is really the only thing that matters to them in terms of what they want to do. And so I'm just curious, does he just have two sets of friends in the two places?
Yes, he does. So he has friends in Utah, and then he has friends here in Alaska, and he's got some really great friends.
And we travel a bit, too. He's got, you know, pretty good friends in Colorado. I still have family in Colorado, and... he's actually getting to know some friends in New Zealand as well.
Yeah.
So,
wow. I'm curious as to whether like social media and that sort of thing makes that easy for him, or if it's just sort of when you show up, you catch up again.
Yeah, he doesn't do Facebook, and so it's just when he's entertained the idea of doing Instagram because of his friends, he said, but he still hasn't done it. But, yeah, he just shows up and sees his friends and... Well, that's like with me and Bill, when I haven't seen my girlfriends for like sometimes 3 months, 6 months, or I just reconnected with a girlfriend in New Zealand, and last time I saw her was like, 10 years ago, and we just reconnected like it was yesterday, and we started chit-chatting like always.
So it seems, you know, going back to the school thing for just a second, it seems like the schools would... be naturally resistant to this, but you're the parent and you kind of get to decide, show up and register them and just start, right? So it's, in a way, where a lot of people might think, well, I can't do that, the school won't let me. It's really your decision.
Right. Precisely. That's the way it worked out.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, at first they weren't so willing to embrace the idea.
Well, healing was okay. It was Utah that had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like one time when I went to New Zealand, and I said, I'm going to be leaving for, like, how long do I go down there for a month? And she's like, well, you can't do that because he's basically going to be old. I'm like, well, can I just re-enroll him? She's like, yeah, I suppose you can do that. I said, well, let's just do that. She didn't like it, but I just took him out of school and re-enrolled him. And he was only, in kindergarten then, so...
Right, there's nothing they could really do about it, right?
not really.
Yeah.
And what they realized over time, since we were doing every year, is that he was a well-adjusted enough kid to handle the situation. And I think that's one of the bigger concerns for them. It's not necessarily going to work in every situation.
Right. He's a well-adjusted kid. He's used to spending a lot of time around adults, and you guys are doing really cool stuff. So it's not like he's really, not like he's being pulled around to do, pick fruit from in the hot sun or something. He's actually
right. He's having great experiences, and he is bringing those experiences into the classroom, and the teachers are realizing that through his relationship with the other kids in the class, and he's talking about things that are, you know, honestly kind of opening the minds of the other kids in the classroom, and it opens up discussions and things like that. And so they've really sort of begun at this point to understand the benefit of all of that.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking with Bill Overington and Louise Loverich about their unique lifestyle, which is part in Healy, where they run the Denali Outdoor Center, part in Salt Lake City area in Utah, a little bit in Colorado, a little bit in New Zealand, and with their son, Louis, who's 13 years old, and how Louis adjusts to this nomadic world of going back and forth. Our topic today is the different kind of lifestyles where you really work your lifestyle around your outdoor interests and your family life and how that can work. And it sounds like Bill and Louise have really made it work. But it seems like there must be some downsides to this, and that you guys have to come clean as to what some of the challenges and difficulties that you've run into are.
Moving your stuff twice a year, closing down a house, reopening another house, that's a lot of work. It's not easy, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Deciding which direction we're going. Are we going to Utah? Are we going to New Zealand? How is all of that going to work? We tried homeschooling for the first time this year, and Louis, you know, he did well, but it was very challenging for him. There was a lot of travel time and just finding the time to sit down and commit and get the work done while traveling, moving around different locations. It definitely was not easy. There were some frustrating times and all of that.
Well, you know, I've found that my kids' teachers have a much easier time getting them to do stuff than I do, right? I mean, if I...
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. So when you tell them to study, it's not always that easy to make that happen with a 13-year-old.
That's quite true. And you have to tell them to do enough things in life. And when you then have to be their teacher as well, at some point they reach saturation and they just don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, I can identify with that too. Yeah,
absolutely.
So it sounds like being in school, it's kind of a preferable model as far as you guys are concerned.
Well, yeah, and it's really more about Louis' opinion and decision on all of that. He would like to be in the classroom and be with his friends. You know.
Yeah,
so.
He missed school. He said, "Well, he missed the interaction." He's like, "Oh, I'm just sitting here with you as opposed to having my friends." And then he tries to goof around with me as opposed to, you know, he says, "Well, I goof around with my friends." And I'm like, "Well, I'm kind of a little bit older than you, Louis, so I'm not on the same level with goofing around."
Yeah, but you're getting a little insight into what his life is really like. Yeah. So it seems like the cost would also be a factor to think about in this. You know, when you talk a little bit on your website about when you were younger and Louise, you decided to do a year as a ski bum, and which is, I kind of think that would be kind of heavenly, but you can only really do that when you don't have a lot of other responsibilities. So when you guys are thinking about having different homes, that's a pretty big investment, especially when you also include, you know, going back and forth between places and moving all your stuff and you know, paying mortgages and everything else. How does that work out for you?
That's been challenging for sure. Yeah. I mean, every year I think I'm getting better, but I don't with my stuff. So I always have a different plan of attack. So I think I've tried 20 or 30 different plans of attack. And I'm like, okay, so this time I'm definitely going to get three different sets of clothes in three different places, because that's the most challenging thing for me is like packing up my gear and my clothes. I'm like, I just don't need all that stuff. Okay, I have to have three different sets of it. So then I just, you know, I remember hearing years ago in New Zealand, this American guy was living in New Zealand. He's like, I just have one little carry-on bag, and I take on the plane, and I just go from my place in New Zealand to my place in the States. I'm like, well, that sounds easier than what we do. We have bags and duffels. And
we just travel with a lot of gear because it's, like you say, the financial side of it is that's the... You know, the barrier, I guess, is, okay, do you have three of everything, mountain bikes, kayaks, skis,
this stuff is expensive,
all your camping gear, you know, and then, like you say, there's the mortgage side of it. So we, you know, we have a home in Utah, and we, fortunately for us, we have summer accommodations here at our business in Healy. We have a 30-acre property with a campground and cabin rentals, and we function out of basically a one-room cabin here in Healy. So, there are those challenges as well.
Do you have some kind of big vehicle you haul everything back and forth in?
Mm-hmm, a truck, a crew cab truck with a little trailer, a little box trailer behind it. Our commute, I have driven 36 one-way trips between the lower 48 and Alaska now.
Wow.
Over the years, moving stuff back and forth, hauling our gear. A lot of times, Louise and Louie will fly from the lower 48 to Alaska in the spring, and then going south, we'll make a family road trip out of it. The trip north, it's not really the right time of year, I guess, for a road trip. You know, it's breakup pretty much the whole way up.
Mm-hmm.
And And so I just do that in 4 or 5 days and drive it straight through. And then going south, we'll take a couple of weeks on the road, and we'll stop at some of our favorite destinations along the way, spend a bunch of time in Canada, and make our way south.
Oh, that sounds fun. Although maybe after 30 times, it might not be that much fun.
Well, right.
So I'm thinking that you guys are obviously really expert in your chosen endeavors of river rafting and kayaking and skiing. And your son probably has had some opportunities in those areas that very few other kids that age would have. What are his interests? Is he really good in a kayak? Have you allowed him to sort of jump into that at a young age?
He's quite an enthusiast.
He's a very good
kayaker.
We do not have
to motivate him. So he skis competitively in the winter, free ride, and so that's really as much as anything what continues to take us back to Utah. He skis with a program there, the Altabird free ride team. And last year he was the U-12 national champ. This year he finished 7th overall, and he moved up in age division, so he was U-15. So he was competing with, 12 through 15-year-olds, actually. And so he ended up 7th overall out of 299 in his age division.
Wow, very impressive.
And he was the only 12-year-old to qualify for the national championships in his age division. And so he has that going for him in the winter. And then in the summer, Louise and I, especially this time of year, we have a hard time getting out. We're getting the business started up and training new employees and everything. And Louie goes paddling just about every day. He goes out on the lake really almost every day to practice his rolls and practice his paddling techniques, and he's got a new play boat. So he goes out and does flat water tricks, but he gets on the river with our rafting trips or with raft guides who are kayakers, and he is, getting to be a pretty good little kayaker. He, for instance, was it yesterday afternoon?
He went on the canyon.
They'll just kayak through the Nanana River Canyon with our rafting trips by himself.
He's 13.
That's crazy.
He likes to come back and tell us about all the amazing tricks that he did while he went down the river and show off for the tourists.
I bet the tourists go bananas when they see that.
Well,
oh, they love it.
Some lady asked him after he got off the trip last night. A lady came up and said to him, "Now, honey, I need to get your name so that when you get in the Olympics, I can say I went down the river with that young boy."
Yeah, well, that might be a good plan, given his abilities in skiing and kayaking. Maybe he's a double Olympian.
Well, we'll see. Yeah,
Did he do his mountain bike ride before or after kayaking yesterday?
Oh, he did 2 mountain bike rides. He did one in the – no, he didn't do the one in the morning. He just did it after kayaking last night. He went with one of our drivers, Dave, and they went mountain biking after he went kayaking, so –
Well, that must give you guys a good sense of accomplishment in terms of the fact that you have reared him in this environment and that he's totally taken to it, and it's, obviously a huge part of his life now.
It really is.
Yeah.
He's just so, excited about it all, and it gives him a way to just, vent his energy, and you know how much energy a 13-year-old boy can have, and so... I think it's great. He's very self-motivated, and it was reflected, actually, in his homeschooling. Once he sat down and, focused on it, he was really quite self-motivated and got the work done. We would tell him, you have to get this done before you can go play, Louie, and that's just the way it is. And so he was pretty good about it.
And you knew he wanted to go play, so.
Yeah, we knew he wanted to go play, yeah.
Yeah, well, you're the, for those parents out there trying to get their kids off the computer, that's kind of inspiring to hear. So I really want to thank you guys.
I think it's a viable solution, and I know that parents struggle with it, And just From my perspective, I think from our perspective, if I can speak for Louise as well, it's just about giving Louie or any child an opportunity to do something in the outdoors, get them outside and engage them in an activity, something that interests them, that's fun to do. And, you know, I think they'll take it from there. Once they're having a good time, they'll want to do it more.
Yeah, they just have to find that passion of their own, which sounds like he really has. But he's had extra opportunity to, thanks to you guys. Well, I want to thank my guests. This has been really interesting. I really appreciate your sharing your lives with us, Bill Overington and Louise Loverich, who have the Denali Outdoor Center in Healy. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Charles.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable.
Thanks for having us on your show.
Oh, it was great. Thank you. And now we're going to be taking a quick break. Lots of families pack up the car for some weekend camping along a rural highway in a national forest or state park. But now we're going to hear about a family that takes it to an extreme. This Seattle couple loads up their 5-year-old daughter in a home-built aircraft to pitch a tent in some of the most isolated parts of Alaska. Some might call it risky, others call it a dream come true. This report comes to us from Seattle reporter Ashley Gross.
For about 11 months of the year, Mark Reed and his wife, Chris Buchanan, live in Ballard. They recently moved into a fixer-upper.
The house is still a work in progress.
The other month of the year, they spend in Alaska. Their home there is a tent they pitch wherever they're able to land their plane. They drink water filtered from a stream. They eat fish they catch themselves. They've been hooked on that wide open space ever since their first trip in 2008.
We were traveling over terrain pretty soon into our trip where we couldn't see a town or a settlement or even a road outside of any of the windows.
They let the weather dictate their way. If it's clear, they can make it to places few humans get a chance to go. The northernmost reaches of Alaska, Prudhoe Bay, the Brooks Range, the Colville River. Their means of transportation is kept in a hangar at Payne Field.
And this is the machine.
It's a single-engine prop plane, canary yellow, a bit longer than a Subaru Outback.
And the wings are riveted aluminum here. There's thousands of rivets in there. Lots and lots of hours of riveting.
You did all that?
Oh, yes.
Reed built it from a kit, but added lots of customization, mostly to make the plane safer. He has 3 GPSs and 2 electrical systems.
How did it feel the first time you took this plane up? The very first time?
Oh, it was a hoot. You know, there's a certain amount of trepidation. I'd spent almost 3,000 hours building it. I didn't have too many doubts about it, but you are a test pilot, and that first flight is always an exciting one.
Reed has always loved making things, especially things that go up in the sky. In college, he taught himself how to make technical, high-end kites, you know, the kind that do flips in the air. He turned that into a business called Prism Designs. About a decade ago, he reached a point where things were going well, but he felt a little bored.
When that happens for me, it's always been helpful to think about, well, what would you be doing if you could be doing anything at all, and time and money was no object. And one day that idea popped into mind, and the idea was to build an airplane and fly it to the northernmost point in Alaska and then fly it down to the southernmost point in South America.
There's an assumption that this is a mad idea that my husband had that I somehow had to be convinced to go along with, and my friends who know me are just as likely to think that the idea came from me.
They share an adventurous spirit. Reed already had his pilot's license, and Buchanan got hers, too. After their first trip, they decided they wanted to go to Alaska every year, and they ditched the South America idea.
We really had our minds blown by the experience of being in that landscape.
2 years after that trip, their daughter was born.
I want to take off my tape.
Okay, let's take off your tape, because it's getting to be time for bed.
When Rachel arrived 5 years ago, did you guys have to have a conversation about, are we going to keep doing this?
No,
I don't think that was not a conversation for us.
They just installed an Evenflow kids car seat in the back of the plane. They rejiggered what they take to accommodate kid gear. Some necessities these days include dum-dum lollipops and a few stuffed animals. The trips are special for Rachel, too.
Do you have a favorite thing about Alaska?
Picking blueberries.
I'm fascinated by that. I have kids, and sometimes I feel almost paralyzed by fear about the dangers that exist. When they climb too high in a tree, I get freaked out. It's hard to imagine taking them to isolated parts of Alaska in a small plane, but I admire it. It's all about teaching kids to jump into life with both feet.
There's something in my tights.
What's in your tights?
It's bothering my toes.
Buchanan and Reed want their daughter to experience how amazing our planet is.
There's something to be said for appreciating the scale of the world that you live in. And it shouldn't be scary.
Making good judgments is another thing they want to teach Rachel. They plan extensively before each flight. That's how they handle the risks of flying in Alaska, the massive mountains, the unforgiving weather.
You spend a lot of time looking pretty far ahead of the airplane, trying to think about what could happen next, what you may be headed towards next, and what you're going to do about it.
That means not just having a plan B, but plans C, D, E, and F. Still, flying's not the only risk. There's also wildlife. They've seen plenty of bears. But animal encounters can also be magical. Once, a curious caribou spent a long time watching them fly a kite and then slowly moved toward them.
That caribou just decided it was time to come and check it out and see what was going on with this colorful thing in the air and these strange bipeds on the ground.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, have you put this on? This is a life vest.
And that's why when Reed asks me if I want to go up with him in his plane, I agree. I'm a little nervous, and I'm kicking myself for not buying life insurance like I've been meaning to. But if it's safe enough for them to take their kid in the plane, I decide to chill out.
It's a survival gear that we typically like to travel with.
Do I need to know how to use this?
Rudimentary stuff. All you really need to know.
We climb into the plane. It's not roomy.
There.
I'm feeling pretty calm. I know Reed is a careful guy, but then I see a sign on the dashboard.
I just noticed this passenger warning. This aircraft is amateur built and does not comply with federal safety regulations for standard aircraft.
Reed says, relax. He says the plane actually exceeds a lot of those regulations. We get the go-ahead from the control tower and take off.
Come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly away.
If you're used to flying in a jet, being in a small plane feels almost like you're hardly moving. It's mesmerizing to see Seattle landmarks from above. There's Husky Stadium, there's Gasworks Park. I can see every color of Lake Union in a way that you can't from a boat. Then Reed says, do you want to take the controls? I don't want to be a chicken, but I'm anxious. I lightly push the stick forward and the nose dips. I bank the plane slightly to the right and slightly to the left, and after 30 seconds, I tell him I've had enough. Back on the ground, Reed loads up for a weekend trip. They don't just take their plane to Alaska. They often head to the San Juan Islands. This is a familiar routine. City life is what can feel hard now and then.
Sometimes birthday parties are a little challenging.
Come July, they won't have to worry about a birthday party at Chuck E. Cheese. Instead, they'll be monitoring the weather in Alaska and figuring out good places to land their plane and keeping an eye out for bears. Ashley Gross, KPLU News.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. The program repeats tonight at 9 o'clock on FM 91.1. Connect with Outdoor Explorer anytime. Download podcasts and see what's coming up on future programs by going to our website at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. And today we're talking about raising outdoorsy kids and really having a lifestyle that doesn't sacrifice your outdoor interests after you have kids. And that's something that Leah Keller has been doing. She's an Anchorage mom and organizes the meetup group for the family meetup group. What's it called exactly, Leah?
Oh, goodness. Anchorage Outdoor Family Network.
There you go.
Sorry.
and a lot of other stuff. She has a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old. And you've always done stuff outdoors, and you just haven't been willing to give it all up, to compromise.
No, I need it. I think to be a good mom, I have to have my outside time too.
Uh-huh. So tell me, what kind of stuff were you doing before you had the kids?
Anything I could do to get outside. I would run, hike, bike, snowboard, ice climb, rock climb, pretty much anything that got me out the door.
Were you at all nervous when you were, you know, thinking about having a family that you were going to be sacrificing all that?
It never crossed my mind. I think it probably should have. I mean, a lot of other things crossed my mind, but I think I thought in my mind that, okay, I'll just do everything with this little person joining me.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of worked out, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's certain surprises that you have when you have the little guys around. But you do kind of, well, let's see, Monica, if she, our producer, if she is nodding or smiling because she's recently a new mom and is also a super outdoors person. I think that a little baby is almost a little bit easier than a toddler, right? Because you just strap them onto yourself and kind of keep doing some of the stuff you're doing. Maybe not ice climbing.
No. Oh, no. They don't make helmets that small. It is a lot easier, I think, when children are little. A lot of new parents are very nervous to get outside with their kids because they say, oh, they're so little, but they can't. I mean, they're perfectly happy on you for the most part. I mean, they'll cry if they need to eat or something, but you can go on long hikes with them. You can cross-country ski with them strapped onto you. You can do a lot of other things. It just starts changing once they get mobile and they can't go as far as you, or they want to stop and look at flowers every 2 minutes or something.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Things change.
So in that baby time, though, you have to think about keeping them warm, which, you know, it's if they're against your body and they're well wrapped up, it's usually not too much of a problem. And sort of fed, and they're pretty happy as long as they're with mom or dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, I mean, especially camping, they're probably going to be with you more than they were when you were at home, right?
That's very
true. Because you're in such confined spaces.
Yes, yeah, they are. And it's just amazing to see kids. They're in the car screaming and crying, and then you strap them on and you start hiking. And it seems like 9 times out of 10, they settle down. I mean, even the littlest babies are kind of looking around, so it's neat to see.
Yeah. So as your kids got older, and are they, give us their names and ages.
Kincaid is 6 and Duke is 5.
Okay, both boys?
Yes, both boys.
I wasn't sure if Kincaid was a boy's name or a girl's name. And so you started seeing the need for more compromises after they became toddlers and weren't willing to be carried anymore. What kind of compromises?
It seems like instead of the hike being more about me and getting out and kind of having some relaxation time, it was their time outside. So instead of me saying, let's hike to the German bridge on power line so I can get some exercise, it was, let's just get out the door and no destination, just kind of time outside.
Mm-hmm. And some activities you've kind of given up for the time being?
Ice climbing, rock climbing, because I don't think they can belay me yet. Snowboarding. I'm trying to figure out how to manage getting them onto the lift while I'm on a snowboard. I downhill ski if I'm with them instead of snowboarding. But it seems like almost all my other activities I can kind of just modify if they're with me a little bit.
Just slow down a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Are you thinking in part of this, I don't know how to put this in a nice way, but I mean, is it selfish a little bit, or is it more like, you want to expose your kids to the outdoors? I mean, because this is such an issue, and it's probably not an issue for kids your age yet, but it's certainly going to be an issue in a few years of trying to urge them to be outdoor kids.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd like to say half and half. It is pretty selfish because I know that if we're inside all day, I kind of start going crazy, and I'm not a very good mother, I don't think. A lot more frustration. But if we're outside, they don't fight, and I'm more relaxed, and I get my time. But it's also that I want them to love the outdoors, to have the skills necessary to go on a hike or to go fishing by themselves. I want them to be outdoor people. And another part of the selfish thing is that I want to have kids that I can adventure with when they get older, too.
So. Right. Yeah, and watching them get more capable until you're sort of chasing them and all that.
Oh, yes. They can carry more of the gear when we go camping and stuff, yeah.
So you've been organizing a lot of stuff for other people, too, though.
Yeah. I have a play group on Tuesdays, and that really started because I wanted to get out a lot and was thinking, we could have people join us. And so we've been doing that year-round and a couple hiking groups and just anything to get outside. And I really... I don't know. I'm really passionate about having parents understand that it's not a big deal to get your kids outside, and there's amazing rewards for doing that. Mm-hmm. So
tell me about your playgroup. Is it a playgroup where you, one parent takes over all the kids, or do all the parents stay?
Everybody stays. Yeah.
Okay.
We just meet at a different playground or park around town every Tuesday, and parents are there, and the kids either play on the equipment or they run in the woods and climb trees and stuff. So
one of the things I found in having my kids, who are much older than yours, be involved in outdoor stuff like playgroups, like Junior Nordic, is that you suddenly develop all these friends who are the parents, who now that my kids are off to college and in high school, those friends are still really close friends, you know, because you've spent so much time hanging around with them.
Yes. And it's neat to be in a group of people where I don't feel like I'm that strange, because I'm like, okay, we're going to pack up and we're going to hike out to the Eagle River Yard and stay a couple of days. Mm-hmm. But in some groups that would be, oh my goodness, you know, how do you plan for that? How do you do it?
Yeah.
And it is neat, because if there's a chance where we can get away from our kids, this group of parents will go and like go skiing or go camping or something together, because we have those same outdoor interests. So
that's about the most fun you can have. That your kids can have, and that you can have when you get together with several other families and go out like and rent a whole lodge, or you go out and have a big camping trip with bunches of people in the same place, and the kids just totally go back to nature, you know. They turn into
feral children.
They turn into packs, and they'll run around, you know, and the parents go back, do the same in their own way, right?
Exactly. It's really neat to watch a group of kids, even if the thing that I think is interesting, if there's a child who's more of an indoor child, if they get with a whole bunch of other kids like that, it's neat to see them suddenly be like, oh, we can just play with sticks and dirt. This is so great. So,
and whatever electronics or devices they have, they will not, I mean, it'll sort of be socially unacceptable in that setting, hopefully.
Yes, that's very true.
Well, I hope. I mean, things are changing so much and really so rapidly, even since from my oldest son is about 10 years older than my youngest daughter. Mm-hmm. And The culture has changed just in that amount of time in terms of what's acceptable and what is expected for kids with phones and tablets and other electronics. And I'm finding it a lot harder with the younger kids to, you know, keep them outside and keep them active and interested in that stuff in a way. You know, they're still super outdoorsy kids, I guess, compared to most, but there is always this tension of wanting the electronics around. Mm-hmm. Have you introduced your 5 and 6 year old to electronics at all, or have you managed to keep them apart from it? Or
They like the iPad. They have their games they play, but they know that I have to have a balance, that you can't just wake up in the morning and play the iPad. You know, if we go outside and, you know, go biking for an hour or two, then you can have a little relaxation, but it's not the go-to thing that we always do.
Yeah. What I think is so tough is that when the kids get a little older and they have to make a lot more of their own decisions, those devices are just so seductive and addictive, you know, that it creates a lot of tension in a family in terms of getting them away from the kids.
Yeah. One thing
you're not really at that point yet.
Maybe the culture will change by then, maybe. One thing that we have done is a couple times the kids will say, well, I want to play the pad. I go, well, we could take the phone and go geocaching, or, you know, trying to figure out ways where you can combine them, even though, I don't know, I'd rather just be outside in nature. But
Yeah. Well, geocaching is fun, and it's kind of a good, that's an interesting, or use the maps on the device or something like that.
Yeah.
But you're also using technology in order to get parents together, right?
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about the meetup and how that works.
Well, they're all free things, free just ways to connect with other parents that are going outside. Because a lot of parents, and I can understand, they don't want to go on a hike alone with their kids. It's better when you're in a crowd. But I think technology is really important to connect with other parents, because, I mean, as a mom, I felt like most of my day was in a chair, you know, nursing my child or something. And I couldn't imagine like trying to, I mean, even read the newspaper sometimes, you know, but if I could just pull up on my phone, oh, okay, my goal is going to be at 10 o'clock to get out and play. I think I could do that, you know, because I know these other people are going to be there. So, I mean, I've talked to my mother, who I'm almost 40, and she said, there is no way I could connect with other moms unless I, you know, got out on a stroller. And then I had to, you know, say, do you want to talk to me? It was almost like asking someone out on a date, but on the internet, you can just, okay, group of people, let's go.
Yeah. So how does that work exactly? Explain it for those who haven't done it before.
The meetup group?
Yeah.
All right. It's on meetup.com, and there are thousands of groups of different interests, but
you can find people to go hiking with, or to, you know, we don't have to, doesn't have to be with kids. Kids is a subset. Yeah.
Yeah. The group that I have, the Outdoor Family Network, is it's all activities with your kids. So there's hikes, play groups. Sometimes we've organized bikes and camping trips, berry picking things. And you just say, I want to go. And you just RSVP yes. So very easy.
And then everybody just shows up at the same place. And there's no actual leader, right? Or is there?
It depends. Some of the hikes, we have an actual leader, and they kind of meet and say, you know, we're going to hike to Thunderbird Falls. I think this Thursday they're going to hike to Thunderbird Falls. Great hike for kids.
Uh-huh.
But everybody just kind of goes at their own pace. If people are packing kids, they go a lot faster than the little ones toddling behind. So.
Right.
But it's kind of nice.
But even if somebody has organized it, you're responsible for your own family, for your own stuff. Nobody's going to, it's not, the idea isn't that you're going on a guided thing.
No.
You're just meeting up at the same place at the same time.
Yes, we try to make that clear that it's not like we're going to provide safety and snacks. And it's just, I'm the kind of tour guide, if you will.
Do you sort of decide what the activities are going to be, or how does that take place that the activities are selected?
Our vision is that it would be kind of a co-op, in that if I feel like I want to bike with my kids along the Birtegard Trail, you just post it and other people will come. But it's kind of, so that's what we want, people just who want to have a group of people come with them on an activity. So anybody can post activities that are family outdoors.
Uh-huh. And what age groups are you aiming for in terms of kids?
We usually say under 16, or I think under 18, but any age, I mean, zero.
But
come.
They're probably mostly younger ones, I guess.
Mostly younger. During the summer, it gets older sometimes. Like, older siblings are sometimes forced out with their youngers, which is great.
And how many usually show up, or what's the range?
They're just, for the different activities, it's really different. It seems like in the summer, it goes up and down, because, like all Alaskans, you want to get out and do different things, so you don't always want to stick to a schedule during the summer. But, I mean, it can range to, like, from 5 to, like, 25. I mean, it's very random.
So have you made some new friends that way? I mean, people that you keep in touch with all the time?
All of my good friends right now, I did. We either joined the group at the same time or helped me set up the group, and... Yeah, we're all best friends now, and our kids are best friends growing up together. It's wonderful.
Fun.
Yeah.
You know, in Anchorage, we're such a spread-out city that setting up play dates and connecting with other kids, especially since so many kids go to alternative or magnet schools, can really be quite a challenge. And so it seems like this is one good way to sort of keep in touch with kids who might live in another part of town.
Yeah, it is neat. I mean, we have people from all parts of town. We have actually some from Eagle River who come in to the different things too, and a lot of homeschool children too, because that, I mean, it helps with the socialization while they're outside and playing. So it's kind of neat to see.
So let's give for those who want to get involved with the meetup groups, and yours in particular, so they would go to what, meetup.com or .org?
Yep, meetup.com, and you can search Anchorage Outdoor Family Network, and then you can find us and ask to join the group.
All right. And You're not selective, I imagine. Like, ask to join the group. You're in.
if you have kids, you're in. Yes.
Okay. So we'll make sure that link is on our website at alaskapublic.org. Just click on today's show, Raising an Outdoorsy Family, and you will find that link to my guest Leah Keller's meetup group, which is for families who want to stay outdoorsy and want to keep doing the stuff that they love, even though they have kids. And maybe, you know, having kids is a time to increase your outdoor activity, because you get inspired and you realize that you don't want to work all the time, right? You want to play and you want to have fun. And taking advantage of that time when they're little is, you know, now that I've got one son who's graduated from college, I know that, wow, that is just the gold. In your entire life, that is the gold when you've got little kids, and you really need to make the most of every minute of it. So it's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. You have other stuff that you're organizing with families. Tell us a little bit about the other stuff you're doing.
So I have the Skedaddle, which is somewhat we posted on the Outdoor Family Network, and it's the play group that meets every Tuesday. And then during last school year, I had a kind of forest school group where we'd just go outside, and the kids led our time out there. I think that's really important for kids, is to have free time outside. Not
forest school.
Yes,
forest. So the school is the forest is the school. Okay.
Yes, it's very popular in Germany, though. It's called Walled Kindergarten. Uh-huh. But we would just go outside, and I'd kind of help point out Alaskan plants, tracks in the ground, bugs, and different cloud formations. But it was just the kids' time to be outside and with other kids, and it was really neat. And so we met every Monday through the whole winter, mm-hmm. and every time except if school was closed. But it was really neat to see. Yeah.
So tell me about you were just doing this sort of as a volunteer, just something mm-hmm. you wanted to do. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
So give me a sense of like what a session would be, where you would go. I mean, with little kids, you don't really need to go way out in the forest,
no.
right?
No, we would go to just like DeLong Lake. They have some trees, kind of a wooded place by the lake. Some of the different trailheads around town, or even a favorite spot was the place off Abbott. There's the ball fields there in the mm-hmm. Abbott Loop Community Center, and just go into the woods. And I mean, some days the kids would really want to hike and they'd walk, but other times we'd just get, you know, just out of the parking lot, and they'd have amazing adventures and discoveries there. So,
and their imaginations just take mm-hmm. over, right? And mm-hmm. something about being in the woods is really
it's magical.
Yeah. Did you so you are you a stay at home mom? So you
I am. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, some of this stuff would be a lot harder if you had a regular job.
Very true. Yeah. We've tried to organize different events after like work hours, but it's much harder. It is. I feel so lucky that I can stay at home with my kids and have all this time to outdoor adventures.
So. Mm-hmm. So tell me about, I'm sure you're a cyclist as well, right?
I do sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you manage that with your kids? Because this is an interesting thing that all families have to figure out, like how they're going to tote their kids around on the bike, or at what point are you ready to have them bike and then mm-hmm. to go very, very slowly.
Very slowly, yeah. Yeah, we've kind of done the transition to pulling them in the stroller, which was wonderful. I mean, they could pretty much do anything. And then one started biking very slowly, and so that was hard. So I'd kind of went through this phase of running with the one biker and then running with both. And now I'm up to, which is very nice, I can bike with them and they're getting pretty fast. So it is, it's a transition. It's hard. I mean, I thought about if I should like rollerblade because I needed this mm-hmm. medium speed, but.
Yeah. Well, I ended up with a lot of different contraptions, which I've mostly gotten rid of now, but the trailer bike with a kid, it's kind of like a tandem except you can just strap it onto yours and mm-hmm. kids love that.
Yeah.
Because they feel like they're helping.
And they can go fast, too. They mm-hmm. like that.
And then the trailer, where you mm-hmm. can strap the kid in behind, which is a great contraption. It allows you to sort of stay up at your own pace. Mm-hmm. But you also kind of want to get the kids out on their own bikes and have mm-hmm. high expectations for them so that they'll really become cyclists in their own right?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the greatest inventions lately is the running bike without the pedals. Because even young kids can go fast and kind of keep up with the older peddlers almost. Mm-hmm. But there's not the nervousness of the training wheels because those seem to really impede speed for young children.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like little kids who are still on training wheels, it's mm-hmm. probably better for them to be in the driveway and in front of the house for a while. Because for one thing, it's frustrating for them to be on the trail and go very, very slowly.
Yes.
And for another, they never stay on their own side of the trail. And our bike trails, people are zipping by at good speeds, and you could really have quite a crash.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot. Stay on the right. Stay mm-hmm. on the right. And another thing is learning the rules of the road, which young children can't do as well. I mean, tell people when you're going to pass them and don't just cross to go to the other path. So there is you need to have some, I don't know, intellectual ability to do that.
Right. I know many listeners will be familiar with this feeling when there are parents who have very loose attitudes with their kids in public and you just mm-hmm. and they're really affecting your enjoyment of what you're doing, but they seem oblivious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you want parents to be low key with their kids, but there's a limit, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So let's talk about expectations and how far you can go with your kids and the best ways to handle those personal bests and stuff. I feel like the more you expect your kid to be able to accomplish, to some extent, the more they're going to be able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. How do you, when you're going for a hike and stuff, how do you sort of determine how far you're going and how fast you're going? Is it totally kid-oriented, or do you try to push them along a little bit?
I'd like to say it's all kid-oriented, but it's not. Because most parents, if you've been hiking with them since they're younger, you know when they're just kind of whining because they're whining, or if their legs are really tired. And I think I kind of push them a little bit, saying, you know, come on, let's go, or let's try to distract them for a while. And then they can usually go a little farther. We do a lot of orienteering, and that's one thing that we're working on, that instead of just walking, like, let's try running up this hill, or let's try running a little bit more. So I think it is important to have higher expectations, because they love it when they're like, I didn't think I could, you know, run that far. Mm-hmm. Look at me. And then the next time they'll go farther, and parent win. Yay.
Yeah, and that's how they're going to really get into it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, one thing that I would do when they were young is sort of keep track of how far they had gone. Mm-hmm. Because if you're on a one-way trail, that's the big hazard, is if you go, yes, you'd go out and then they're tired, and then you've got to do the same distance back. And that's, yes, when you really have an unpleasant,
that's
trip
very
for
true
everyone.
Yes, because either you're carrying them, kicking and screaming, or you're out there for much, uh-huh, longer than you want. Yeah. I always bring a lot of snacks, so that definitely helps get them a little farther.
Yeah, you could call them snacks, or you could call them bribes.
Bribes, yes, we do that too.
Those are great at on junior Nordic nights too. And even the coaches will take along a little bag of candy, you know, and bribe the kid to keep moving. And singing and making up stories is such a good way to keep, because it's really, I think their fatigue is usually psychological, you know, to a large degree. Yeah. As long as they're in a good mood, they'll just keep motoring along, right?
Yes. Yeah, we do. We sing songs and, you know, who can find the first white flower, or, you know, who can find the first track. So, yeah, distraction helps.
Yeah. So now you're moving into school years. Mm-hmm. That's going to be quite a transition, isn't it?
Yes, it's weird. I don't know what to do. But one of the things with the outdoor, kind of trying to keep that lifestyle, it's a lot harder if your kid's in full-time school.
It is.
Because you have to work around those hours. But we've tried. I mean, we always walk to school usually because we live so close the long way, and walk home the long way, at least to get a little bit of outside time.
Yeah, but you wouldn't consider like homeschooling or just taking them out so you could just be more outdoorsy?
I've thought about it, but we're going to go this route right now because we can. I mean, we go out on the weekends and, you know, Tuesday night runs there after school. So there's things you can do.
Yeah. Tuesday night runs out at Kincaid.
Yes, that's so great, fun.
Yeah, in the fall time, late summer.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for being with us today. It's been really fun. I love talking about this topic.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Leah Keller is an Anchorage mom and is heads up a meetup group for families with kids called the
Anchorage Outdoor Family Network.
Yeah, check it out. And earlier we heard from Bill Overington and Louise Loverich from the Denali Outdoor Center about their really extreme way of integrating the outdoors into their family life. So Outdoor Explorer is off next week, but we'll be back after the 4th of July with a program on fly fishing. I really learned a lot, and you may too, and it's quite a complex topic. So we hope you'll join us. Thanks for being with us today on Outdoor Explorer. Our producer is Monica Goki. Grace Bojean is our production assistant. And I'm your host, Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.